Welcome to the Praying with the Eyes podcast. Your host is Doug Bronner, senior pastor at Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado. As an avid photographer, Doug combines the beauty of God's creation with the beauty of His Word in a daily Praying with the Eyes devotional blog. Today's discussion digs deeper into a topic first introduced in one of these daily blogs. Thanks for tuning in to today's podcast.
Welcome to today's Praying with the Eyes podcast. It's going to take me a while to get used to saying that. When I did episode number one, I noticed many times that I would say broadcast instead of podcast. As those of you who are new to the Praying with the Eyes podcast, they are a follow-up to a Praying with the Eyes broadcast I did on the IB network and internet radio station. And we've moved it now to a podcast. And we're glad that you're with us today. If you're new, let me just give you a brief description of what happens with these podcasts. I'm Pastor Doug Bronner, and I'm a senior pastor at Holy Cross Lutheran Church. And I am an avid photographer, and for going on 3 years now, I've been writing a daily devotional blog. Fortunately, I've got enough written now that I don't have to write one every day. I can repost some of them, but I post one every day, and I take a picture that I've taken, and I write a short devotion over it, and was encouraged in October to take those blogs and make a broadcast out of them, taking them deeper. And so that's where we are here today. If you would like to see and to read those blogs, you can go to www.dougbronner, that's D-O-U-G-B-R-A-U-N-E-R, www.dougbronner.blogspot.com. Soon that I'm going to land those things over on the Praying with the Eyes website, and I'm going to transition over to there. By the time you're listening to this, you may also, the website may already be up, and some of those blogs posted there as well. I'm going to have to consolidate those eventually and put them all into that website. Praying with the Eyes is a ministry of Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And if you'd like to find out more about Holy Cross, we invite you to go to our website at holycrosscs.org. We'd love to have you come and visit us there. And if you have questions for me or for my guests who are with me, we would invite you to email us at prayingwiththeeyes@gmail.com. That's prayingwiththeeyes@gmail.com. If you listen to the first podcast, you found out that I'm not the only pastor here at Holy Cross. I am privileged. At least I'll say that at the beginning of the podcast. We'll see if I feel that way by the end of the podcast. I'm privileged to serve with Pastor Dave Hall and Pastor Jeffrey Mines. And the last time you heard us, if you were listening to us on the broadcast, last time you heard the three of us together was on a special edition that we did with the Super Bowl. And that was a lot of fun. And so outside of the fact, Jeffrey, that you had to tell us, name dropper that you are, that you arm wrestled Mike Singletary.
That's correct.
And you survived.
And I lost.
Yeah. He said he toyed with you. Yeah. So, what'd you guys think of the Super Bowl, Jeffrey? Did you actually watch any of it?
Nope.
None of it.
Nope. Sat 3 feet next to a television, 3 feet away from a television. Didn't watch any of it.
You missed the best Super Bowl of history. Yeah, you know, I was rooting for Seattle, but it was the best game I've... it was just fun and entertaining.
The television was to my left hand, and my children were playing on the floor in front of me, and so I watched my kids and talked to some members of the church and ate food and ignored the television the entire time. Best Super Bowl I've seen.
Yeah, Dave, you watched some of it though, right?
I watched the whole game. It was great. It was a great game right till the end.
Yeah, even rooting for Seattle, the way it ended. I know a lot of people are mad. I mean, I saw YouTube clips of a guy destroying his big screen TV and whatever else. I mean, it was disappointing. My nephew's son cried when Wilson threw the interception.
Yeah. But I still question the play calling on the end. But
he had to throw a pass. He had to throw a pass. But why that one? Why not to the corner where, you know, if it's not going to be catchable?
I say why not run it?
I have an idea. Maybe we should take some time and cover something that's not been covered a lot lately, and that's Deflategate.
You don't think that's been covered at all lately?
I don't really. I haven't heard much.
You haven't heard much either. Wasn't there something about a suspension or something
like
that?
I haven't heard much.
Yeah, maybe, some former maybe Michigan should. Quarterback, sixth-round draft pick that
I noticed Jerry Hamlin cheats. Was a little bit in depression here lately. Was that Deflategate, you think? He's
going
to have to play, go looks like, unless the appeal goes through.
Well, he hired a high-priced legal team, so.
Yeah, it's not like he can't afford it. Yeah, good grief.
Odds are he's not going to have any suspension time. So we won't see the beginning of the Jimmy Garoppolo era in Foxborough.
I just ordered my Garoppolo jersey. Yeah,
Garoppolo, what a great name.
I'm glad you guys can pronounce it. I'm not even going to try.
Jimmy G.
Yeah, the biggest news for me is, man, Marcus Mariota going second in the draft. I didn't see that coming. I really did. Seriously, I did not see that coming. And I don't know. I think he's set up for failure with Tennessee. I love the guy. He's a great guy. He's a great character person. But
I think Tennessee should have taken the king's ransom that Philadelphia was willing to kick in.
I still can't figure out why they didn't. I mean, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense why Philly would offer that. But their personnel moves have been mystifying for me this offseason anyway.
I just ordered my Philadelphia Eagles.
You get your Mark Sanchez starting quarterback jersey?
Yes.
Well, we're not going to talk football today, but we had a lot of fun with that, and hopefully we'll have a lot of fun talking about a much more serious topic that we're going to deal with today. A member of our congregation had posted a blog he came across on Facebook, and I found it really interesting, and it's one of those topics we want to take on in these kind of podcasts. The title of it is Dear Church, An Open Letter from One of Those Millennials You Can't Figure Out. And we're not going to talk about that right away, but we do want to kind of ease into that topic by first of all talking about generations. You know, that every generation seems to have some kind of a label, the GI generation, baby boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials. And as a way of trying to categorize people born during those decades. And so I'm the boomer. I'm the only boomer in this room right now. And at that, I'm a late bloomer. Oh, I knew that was going to happen. When I wrote this and I was going through my notes, I knew I was going to say that somewhere along the line, and you guys would probably just would have said it anyway. Jeffrey's sitting here smiling.
I'm gonna call you boomer for the rest of the
boomer
podcast. I'm going to call you boomer.
Boomer. Boomer?
Boomer.
Yeah.
Boomer Bronner.
Yeah,
it doesn't have
Martin
quite
Sheen's
the room as Boomer Esiason. That's got a little bit better ring.
And see, now we're talking about football again.
I know. What can I say?
You can go to movies. Martin Sheen has a movie called On the Way. It's on Roku. It's on Amazon that somebody calls him Boomer.
I was wondering, where are you going?
Yeah, I was too. Okay, so anyway, you guys are Gen Xers.
It was Martin Sheen, not Charlie.
You guys are Gen
and
Xers.
Emilio Estevez makes a cameo in it.
Third time. You guys are Gen Xers.
Hey, I've got authority issues, all right? Don't tell me what to do.
So what do you guys make of the generational differences? I mean, we don't have a millennial in here. We're going to talk about millennials. I wish our producer, who might have been here with us today, but he had a meeting to go to, could be here. I might.
And we'll have a millennial on staff as an intern in the fall.
That's right. We will. And where does she? Okay.
And she's a girl, too. So.
Yeah, that's amazing for us here on staff. Poor.
Dilute our testosterone.
Mine's diluted by age.
T-M-I.
I didn't say more than that. Okay, so my generation, they say, you know, covers 1946 to 1964, and there seems to be this gap, and we were talking about earlier between the where people say the baby boomers end and where Gen Xers, you guys, begin. But generally speaking, what I read was 76, but Dave, you said 70.
I said 65. 65 to 80 is what
65.
I've
65 days. Well, then that fills the gap.
Then it fills the gap. Yeah, yeah. You said 76 to 82, and
yeah,
that's only
6
years, and that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So wherever you got that from, they're wrong.
Okay. I agree with you, though. I think it is wrong. I looked at it. I'm going, that doesn't make sense to me. So let's say
because
65
if it's
to
76,
81.
You've got three boomers in the room. And then Jeffrey is the late boomer.
Jeffrey, can I tell you something about podcasting?
I'm ready.
There's not video. So when you smile, Nobody can really see that.
There's no camera in here?
There's no camera.
You know, we can move out into the hallway and latch onto one of the security cameras.
Okay, so my generation, post-World War II, it was expected, and maybe it was for you guys too, but it was really expected, we would be in church. I mean, it was not. There wasn't even a question. Was that Gen Xers too?
For our family, it was.
It depends on which segment of my growing up years for me. With my mom and dad early on, went to church every Sunday that I can remember. We moved to Germany. We went to church one time in 2.5 years, and that was when my grandparents came over for Easter.
Das not gut.
Das ist nicht gut.
See. I have to send you to Patrick to get some German lessons. And when we moved to Oklahoma, my dad wasn't interested in going, and I could typically argue my mom out of me going. And then I moved in with my grandparents.
Yeah, there was no arguing.
There was no room for argument. This is the way it is. So the expectation was back to every Sunday.
Yeah.
We get that pattern.
We were Saturday nighters. We went to worship on Saturday night, and then...
Well, that's kind of a novelty for a Lutheran church, too, to have a Saturday night.
Especially way back when, you know, in like 70s or something.
Yep. St. Paul Lutheran Church in Farmington, Missouri had a Saturday night worship service. A lot of elderly people there. It was there that my parents developed friendships. We would always go to people's houses that were twice the age of my parents. That's who they became friends with. But we worshiped on Saturday night, which meant our Sunday mornings were 100% free and open to
football,
to watch professional wrestling and football games and the St. Louis Cardinals.
You didn't catch the wrestling on Saturday night?
No, we caught it on Sunday morning.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know, but see... Central time zone, Eastern time zone do not have the problem that the Pacific time zone and the Mountain time zone have when it comes to football. Because in both the Central and Eastern, especially Eastern time zone, you can go to church. You can have the potluck afterwards and still catch the first game. You know, it's so different. When I grew up, the first game came on at 10 o'clock. And so that's why we went to 8 o'clock.
We would go to 8 o'clock church if the Broncos were on at 11.
Okay.
Which was the Kansas City game every year was a guarantee for that one.
Yeah. What other generational differences do you think are, as we think about the three kind of generations we're talking about here, boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials, what are some things that stick out in your mind? And you know, Jeffrey, you work a lot with millennials and your speaking engagements and with the youth around here.
Mm-hmm. Technology is the huge, obvious, the big one. I was meeting with a gal yesterday who I would assume is in her late 80s. That might be offensive because she might not be that old, but the truth was is that she told me she could never listen to one of these podcasts because she has no idea how to turn on a computer. Yeah. And so we can talk disparagingly about her. But
it'll be the one time that somebody figures out to help her to
yeah, end. When we were talking and she was talking about technology, she would always flick her finger towards my phone with disdain, like, but, you know, I don't understand those things or what those things do or what those things are about.
No, which finger was she flicking?
She was this one. And so,
Jeffrey, it's a podcast. People cannot see the finger. It's his index finger. Okay? It's his index finger.
And whereas teenagers, we had a teenager over to dinner for our house 10 years ago. And we were eating dinner, and I looked across the table, and I said, oh, could you take your cell phone off the table? And she said that was fine. So she took her cell phone under the table. She took it underneath the table, and I could just tell her mind was working. And I asked her, are you texting under the table? And she said, yep. And that she could text without looking at screen.
And that was with the old T9 texting.
And that was 10 years ago.
You know, our family gatherings, my three millennials and plus a daughter-in-law who's a millennial, that's what meals are. It's their phones are out and they are texting. It's not that they're not engaged in the conversation. It's not they're purposely trying to ignore what's going on, but that's their life.
I saw something new recently where young people are going out to meals together, going out to pie or out to eat or something, and they all stack their cell phones in the center of the table, first one to grab their cell phone has to pay the bill.
Yep.
Hey, now that's – so there's a shift? Are they trying to say, is the next generation going to the unnamed generation that's 11 or under, are they going to rebel against electronics? We don't know. I wonder.
I have no idea because we've seen the pendulum shift from boomers, technology wasn't a huge part of your existence.
Right.
Gen X, technology is a tool. And with the millennials, technology is a part of who they are.
It's called phone stacking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there it is. Yeah. Jeffy has a computer up. He showed us, did a search on phone stacking. That's interesting.
Yeah, right.
So Google phone stacking and you'll get a picture of what this looks like.
You know what's interesting, too, because us boomers, it depends on who you are, whether you've embraced the technology to a degree or not. And in between Janice and me, we're just 8 months apart. And she just She kind of does have a disdain for technology, especially at her job in teaching, which now is highly technology driven. And when we boomers don't get the instruction to help us through it, because millennials, who she's teaching with now, some of the millennials, because millennials go up in their 30s, and Gen Xers who are used to that technology, just assume that we boomers get it and can make that transition. And
although you're making an assumption that millennials and Gen Xers all get it, and they don't.
Well, you know what? That's a good point, Dave.
Because there are millennials that are computer challenged.
Right, because the way the brain functions more than
anything. Right, that there's certain software that just is not intuitive for them.
Right.
And Xers, too. I mean, the generational sociology gives us a broad brush of what a generation is like, but it's not – you don't stamp that out on every person that's in that generation.
Well, and that's kind of a good segue into where we're going, because I think it's real easy for us to think that millennials are one way and Gen Xers another way and boomers another way when we speak in generalities, and yet there's such a diversity within each one of those generations. So we're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about four different things that this Jonathan brings up about reaching millennials, especially in the context of worship. We'll be back in a moment.
Are you looking for a place where you can be welcomed as you are? A place where your thoughts are welcomed as well as your doubts? A place where you can talk about God without being judged? Then I invite you to join the life-changing experience of Life Tree Cafe. At Life Tree Cafe, you will spend an hour gathering with others to experience a host-led discussion over topics ranging from serious to fun and quirky. For more information about Life Tree Cafe and for a location near you, visit their website at www.lifetreecafe.com. If you live in the Colorado Springs community, you are more than welcome to join us at Holy Cross for one of three Life Tree experiences on Monday or Tuesday over the lunch hour from 11:45 to 12:45, or on Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. Life Tree Cafe. Come join the conversation.
If you have questions for me and for Pastor Dave and Pastor Jeffrey, please feel free to email us at prayingwiththeeyes@gmail.com. Again, the website, prayingwiththeeyes.com, should be up now as well, and you can go there if you'd like to see what other people are writing as well. I'm not the only blogger on that. There'll be others that blog, as well as different photo galleries. I'll be a part of that website. This is a ministry of Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Colorado Springs, where the three of us are privileged to be pastors. So the blog that we're dealing with today is entitled Dear Church, an Open Letter from One of Those Millennials You Can't Figure Out. It's written by a man named Jonathan, and Jeffrey, we do not know his last name. Don't get us in trouble.
I'm searching it right now.
Are you? Good luck. So Dave, you and I can get a word in now, because he's going to be looking for the Jonathan's last name.
The techie in the room with his laptop. Yeah. You didn't bring your iPad.
Yeah.
Or does that not talk to the network?
I don't know. I think it looks more professional to have the laptop.
sitting in front of him. And actually, he can hide it from us better if he has a laptop.
He looks more trendy if he has his iPad.
He's actually setting up his fantasy baseball lineup for today.
I believe that.
Yeah, well, I don't want to talk about my lineup. We're not going there. Anyway, he
is
well,
fantasy.
We do know Dave has a love for baseball. I mean, just he's passionate about
golf on steroids. hit the white ball and run.
What we do know about Jonathan is that he is a music director at a United Methodist Church in Houston. We don't know which one. Let's start out here by having him. I want to read a portion of the blog that describes where he describes himself. He writes, "I've always been in church. I've never left, though I've come close several times. I would have left in high school if I'd had the option, but in my house, attendance at my cool, hip, contemporary worshiping, youth group glorifying, moralism preaching, theological eschewing congregation was a non-negotiable. So I went. Through every repetition of shout to the Lord, every true love waits commitment ceremony, every rapture-ready dispensationalist Bible study, every sermon series on how to make myself into a good, moral, well-behaved person so that I wouldn't tick off God and bring condemnation to America. But I was always a misfit, always a skeptic, always a doubter, always an outsider." Those last four comments, always a misfit, always a skeptic, always a doubter, always an outsider. That seems like description I hear about millennials. You know, again, none of us in this room are millennials. Is that true, or is this just you think this guy's personality has bent?
It was that same one was applied to Gen X when we were in our 20s as well.
Okay, so
I mean, there's some of those characteristics that just apply to anybody in their 20s.
You were probably called that when you were a boomer.
Absolutely.
He still is a boomer.
I just want to say that I really can't.
He hasn't joined the GI generation yet.
No, I'm getting close.
I really connected with what Jonathan Aigner, who lives in Houston, Texas, wrote.
So you did find his last name.
And what church does he serve?
He is a church musician.
I told you that.
He wasn't listening.
Okay, back to searching.
No, don't. Just tell us what.
No, I just wanted to use his last name.
Aigner, did you say?
A-I-G-N-E-R.
Okay, go on to what you were going to say, Jeffrey.
That's all. I just wanted to use his last name. That was the only pun I was making.
This is the depth of the conversations we have on staff around here. okay, so it can be used of any generation.
I think some of those apply to just the state of tension, to use one of your words, that exists with people in their 20s as they're establishing their own independence and autonomy, while they're still, you know, part of it is that seeking connection still with family and parental figures.
Don't you always seek to be different? Because
every day.
Well, but my point is the next generation doesn't want to be just like the generation before them, or they're the same exact generation. You want to make your mark. You want to be something different. And when you strive to become something different, then the generation before you can't understand you.
Okay, right. This is what my generation would have said. I can only speak for mine, but I'm assuming you guys probably did too. The last line of his blog, it's time to be uncool, to be radical, to be different.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing millennial-ish about that's unique to millennials.
Nothing unique to millennials,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The key term for this group of people is authenticity.
Yep.
They just want to know that what you're doing is authentic. It's not made up. It's not contrived. That it's just real and it's genuine.
And I think that's a shift from previous generations. I think part of it is the millennials have grown up in being marketed to death. And
well,
so there's a higher degree of suspicion there, I think, than with other generations that, you know, the marketing techniques were not as prevalent. And I don't remember feeling bombarded. I mean, I
don't even watch commercials anymore. Do you?
No.
Except during the news.
See, I don't even watch the news anymore.
I get to see the same CenturyLink commercial every night, the same Toyota commercial every night. Occasionally, Sonic will come up with a new one, but yeah, that's about the extent of it.
Our family, we don't watch anything live anymore. Mm-hmm. Our family records everything digitally, and then we go to our list and watch what's on our list and fast forward through all our commercials.
Yeah, we don't watch any network television, period. That's not on, that doesn't translate over to Netflix or Amazon Prime.
And we watch the 10 o'clock news every night.
Okay, so he says this about, he's speaking to, I'm assuming, he doesn't make this real clear, but I was assuming I read this. He's speaking to those who
I'm
are not millennials.
I'm assuming you read that also.
Yeah, thank you. I did read it. I read it a few times.
Was that your assumption that he read it?
See what I put up with
around
here?
I try not to make assumptions.
Oh.
Hey, guys, remember, I'm the senior pastor. I'm the senior pastor here. Come on.
Yeah, we'll focus.
He said, and he's speaking to the non-millennials, truth is my relationship with you is still love-hate. I love the theology, but I hate the expectations of pseudo-piety. Love the gospel, hate the patriotic moralism. Love the Bible, hate the way it's used. Love Jesus, but hate what we've done with him. Love worship, but hate Jesus-y entertainment. Is that related to the authenticity you guys are talking about?
Yep. And with that description, I could be a millennial.
If it looks like a show and feels like a show, it's not authentic.
See, it's
like the Truman Show, you know, where he paddles to the end of the earth and thumps into the wall.
Why do you think reality show took off so much?
Okay, what generation was most locked into reality television?
I don't know why I brought reality TV up. I don't know.
I'll say Marcy loves reality TV. Thousand, so. Yeah.
Marcy works here.
I know Marcy works here.
Marcy's also a baby boomer.
Yep. She loves reality TV. I think part of the push for reality TV was it's cheaper to produce. Networks make more money on it because they don't have to pay actors.
There's truth to that. Now, I think baby boomers play a big role in this entertainment style worship, and maybe funneling into Gen Xers to a degree too. In this, when after the Vietnam War and the effects of the Vietnam War, institutions were not trusted. And Rochelle Hecker and I talked about that quite a bit, and so included in that then became the way institutions did things. You know, and so. We're going to talk about liturgy in a moment. You know, that became very distrusted, and we wanted to be different again. So we had this free-flowing liturgy. It's still liturgy, but we had this free-flowing liturgy, but it was different than what we grew up with. It was a form of rebellion, that entertainment that came in. When I first became a pastor in '82, it was in the '80s. We had a Indian Hills community church down the street from us. It was growing like by leaps and bounds. Had a worship team and stuff, and we all wanted to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Up through the 90s,
wanted to be cool, popular,
hip. So authenticity. Well, let's take on the first thing he says. And he talks about, we're going to talk about four different things here that he says we can do to better
connect with
the millennials. Thank you, Dave. First, number one, don't expect a worship style, quote unquote, to do your dirty work.
You can't just say if we're going to bring in drums and a guitar, now we're going to connect. So that's not true.
And yet I've heard that. You've heard that.
Oh, yeah.
I've maybe spoken it too.
I don't know. I'd have to listen.
You guys listen to me way too well.
When I was in Colby, Kansas, we introduced contemporary worship, and our biggest fan of it was a lady in her probably mid to late 70s who grew up Methodist, and she hated the matins liturgy out of the hymnal, and she loved the contemporary service, and the youth in our congregation who had grown up on the hymnal hated the contemporary service.
Mm-hmm.
So I go back to what our former director of worship, Greg Brandon, said, that you know he would speak in worship of worship languages. And you look at our three styles of worship here, and it's three different languages that reach three different collections of people. And it's very demographically, it's very wide at all three of them.
Okay, and
I mean, we have young families at our traditional liturgical service, as well as grandparents and great grandparents.
Yeah.
And we have that same mix at our most contemporary service.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. And that hit me on Sunday when we were giving communion because two ladies, I'd say probably in their 80s, to communion at the contemporary worship service.
They're not listening.
Yeah.
they can't turn their computer on.
But they've achieved that length of life on this planet.
I had a 90-year-old shut in ask me how to get to this the podcast when I was with her last time, and she's very computer literate.
Well, please forgive me, all of you that are over 80.
You can send your hate mail to Pastor Jeffrey Mines at Holy Cross, 4125 Constitution Avenue, Colorado Springs, 80909.
And we look forward to reading those letters with him
on air.
And if you email, go to the Holy Cross website and seek him out there.
But there is, here's another assumption is that worship is evangelism.
It's not. Worship is worship.
But it was. It was.
I know. Worship was
evangelism. You know.
Even Willow Creek has backed off on that, and they were the ones who pioneered the movement of the Seeker Service.
And were effective with it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would not have. Everybody wanted to copy them, and many people did, and many people failed.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It helps when you have people who write, sitcoms for NBC on your writing staff.
I didn't realize that, really.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, they had some former NBC writers on their church staff.
Huh. But I think we got to get rid of that assumption to begin with, about what worship is to begin. It's not there for attracting the unchurched, the dechurched, the
yeah. Its primary purpose is worshiping God, receiving the gifts of God, and responding.
Right.
Now, within that context, there's still the fellowship and relational connections, and those are points where people can experience Jesus one-on-one, and I think that's some evangelistic-type things. But the focus of the service itself is connecting with God.
Do you know why the hymnal's called the Lutheran Service Book?
Yeah, I'm sure you're going to tell me because you just went through a class on it.
The maroon yep. hymnal, right? Yep. It's called the Lutheran Service Book. You ask 10 Lutherans, and they'll say, well, it's because it contains the services we use, which is not true. I mean, they do contain the services we use, but the reason it's called the Lutheran Service Book is because it is within the context of this book that God comes down to serve his people with word, sacrament, baptism, communion, liturgy, and here he has come to serve his people.
Yeah, and what got flipped upside down, I don't know, it's probably been that way for a long time, is that worship predominantly is seen as what we bring to the table, not what God brings to the table.
Well, part of that comes from the root for liturgy, liturgia, which means service of the people.
Right.
So, I mean, for me, worship is, it's a dance with God.
Well, and it's not. I'm not trying to exclude that either. I'm just trying to say predominantly was what we brought then. God maybe responds to it if our mm-hmm. worship is acceptable to him. And that's wrong. It flips the other way around.
And actually, we've shifted to the next extreme of worship is all about me, and I come and I consume.
Right. Right. And it's interesting because I just went through the broadcast that Jeffrey and I did. We talked about that, about being consumers, and this is kind of the same issue that we were talking about. And we have a millennial in the room right now. He's playing with his phone. What game are you playing,
he's
Jeffrey?
A wannabe millennial. He probably doesn't even know how to play Angry Birds.
I am literally on Facebook right now.
He is literally on the Facebook.
On the Facebook.
Okay, let's take on the second thing he says here. Don't give us entertainment, give us liturgy.
By the way,
oh, yes, Jeffrey. He's pointing a finger at me. That looks dangerous.
By the way, I think another...
Which finger is it this time?
I think
index finger again.
Another quality for those who are younger than those who are older, those who are younger can multitask now. And
so he is trying to be a millennial.
Well, and are in the process of training older people to do the same. Because if you look at your television screens right now, you've got a newscast going on. You've got an order that's coming up over to your left-hand side. You've got tickers running on the bottom. Some shows run 2 to 3 different tickers. And so at the same time, you're looking at what's coming up. You're listening to the current broadcast, and you're following the ticker down below with your phone.
But studies are coming out showing that multitasking is not more efficient.
Studies are showing multitasking is a myth. It's not being able to focus on more than one thing at a time. It's flipping channels very quickly between different activities.
And your brain never settles on anything. You're always moving.
It contributes to attention deficit disorder.
Well, let's take a break. We'll take on the next three in the next segment, rather than start this the next discussion about liturgy. And let's just take a break, a short break here. And when we come back, we'll take on the last three of these points. Back in a moment.
At Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado, we encourage those who hunger to be nourished by God. We believe that true nourishment in our lives is met in our Creator and Redeemer God. At Holy Cross, we proclaim the message that our God desires intimacy with us through His Son, Jesus Christ, and that worship is an experience of this intimacy. To find out more about worship styles and times, visit our website at www.holycrosscs.org. And if you don't live in the Colorado Springs community or you are part of a different Christian community, we encourage you to join God's people as He nourishes His relationship with you.
Welcome back to the Praying with the Eyes podcast as we talk about how to engage, I think multiple generations, not just, we focus on millennials because that's the article, but as we've been talking about, it seems like a lot of things apply to all generations. Maybe mm-hmm. they manifest themselves in different ways, and maybe as we talked about that the idea of authenticity is something that's really unique to the millennials.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, you have people are people, no matter what.
Yep.
I mean, periodically I go back and I read Exodus as a reminder that heaven on earth does not exist within the church, never has. The flip side is there are certain events that happen in life that influence generations. Gen Xers are the latchkey kids. Gen Xers are the first generation where abortion was legal. And so that has some impact there. For millennials, technology is just exploding, and, it's all over the place. And so that just becomes, it embeds itself in their being.
And once again, with them, I think with every generation, maybe I'm wrong about this, but it seems like every generation, there's something like that you're talking about with Gen Xers and abortion.
Yeah, there's some signature event that happens.
And, of course, the signature event was always, we labeled as Vietnam
right.
during ours.
And for millennials, they don't really know a time when the U.S. was not engaged in war.
That's true, because we're talking about people from 11 to 33. Basically, with millennials, the 82.
Well, the group of teenagers here that we work with have never spent a day in their life where they haven't heard the word terrorism repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
don't know what life is like without a home computer.
Okay, but each one of those events, for me, Vietnam, for you guys with abortion and those things that were crises and technology, there doesn't seem to be, within that event, an idea of where we're going to go from here. We don't know where technology is going to lead, what's going to do. So I've thought often that the multitude of movies coming out that are apocalyptic dealing with technology, really, is that kind of the idea of the fear out there of this millennial generation? Is this what technology is going to lead to? Is this apocalyptic world?
That's not new, though. That's been in science fiction forever. I mean, you go back to the Star Trek Next Generation
series. But the form of it, though, right now is technologically driven,
yeah.
In my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. Transformers, that's a generation, this millennial generation.
That started as a cartoon when I was a kid.
That's true.
Part of my afternoon routine, when Bumblebee was a yellow Volkswagen Bug.
Really?
I'd come home and I'd turn on
Bumblebee
Transformers.
Was a Volkswagen.
Was a Volkswagen Bug. I was disappointed when they brought him into the world as a Camaro.
Well, maybe it starts with Gen Xers then too. Maybe it's not. We weren't so concerned about technology.
Right.
And that.
Yeah, War of the Worlds for your generation.
There was no idea of digital. Okay, I mean, I'm sure there were people working on digital technology when I was growing up, but as far as understanding.
I think Dell Computer was started in 1976, so.
Okay.
By Michael Dell in his garage.
Well, I know that the PC came out right when I graduated from seminary, around 82, where we had an IBM PC for the church. It cost, I don't know, many thousands of dollars.
Right.
One for the whole church. But anyway, so don't give us entertainment, give us liturgy, he says.
What is liturgy? Now, I think as I read the context of his article, he's looking at the ancient, centuries-old liturgies that Lutherans, Episcopals, and Catholics latch onto.
Right. It sounds like even in United Methodist, that's who he's serving.
Methodists, they're not as formal, but yeah, they do have a... Their services are... Well, they're liturgical in the sense that you have the same elements in the same order every week.
Okay.
Liturgy, having taken this class now, that one of the best definitions of liturgy is an exercise in breathing between God and his people. So God responds, we respond back. God responds, we respond back. And it's a back and forth communication between God and his people. And that's what liturgy is, back and forth, back and forth.
But if you were to ask most of the people here at Holy Cross, being in the Lutheran tradition, you ask them what liturgy is, they would say divine service, 1, 2, 3, and maybe 4. But specifically, in those of you who are...
Well, I blame the leadership then.
That's
you're
us.
Part of it. Take a look in the mirror, pal.
And I think most of the people that are listening to this from Holy Cross will understand when I say the one that the longtime Lutherans love is that Divine Service 3.
Yep, that goes back to the Lutheran hymnal. I love the titles for our worship books: The Lutheran Hymnal, Lutheran Worship, and Lutheran Service Book.
Oh Lord, open my lips.
Yeah,
and hopefully he'll close them again too.
But, okay, I think that's what people think of as a printed order of worship out of a hymnal.
Right.
And it can be whatever denominational background.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's not liturgy. That's a form.
It's typically a rigid, stock, standardized form.
And you and I have talked many times that our contemporary service can be more rigid than the service out of the hymnal.
Yep.
Yeah, we fight that. But there's a liturgy there, too. There's a liturgy that
that movement of God breathing and us taking it in and exhaling back.
So what does he mean by entertainment? Don't give me entertainment.
You don't need smoke machines.
You guys been to a worship service that has smoke machines?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I never have. Yeah. That would just turn me off.
Yeah. And I know of a Lutheran church in Lincoln, Nebraska where you served internship.
No, that was my first call was in Lincoln.
There's a Lutheran church in Nebraska who's doing smoke machines and screens and all that stuff. And they have a very strong, growing worship service there. But when you connect with any of the leaders, none of them care about the entertainment value of it. They care about the quality of worship. And so they will say in one of their meetings, they'll say, here will be a nice spot to bring to run some smoke just because it will help the worshiper connect, or it will enable God to do his thing here. Something, the attitude is about we're here to worship, not to be entertained.
But that's what I'm getting from Jonathan in writing his blog is that's phony.
Do the special effects then almost become sacramental at a point?
Yep. Yeah.
Well, we all had heard or saw the clip of movie that was put out by a group that has I know what button to push and they get this response from the
guitarist who he knew what effect would cause people to raise their hands in the air.
Yeah.
And so is that connecting with God or is that manipulating human emotions?
Yeah, for me it's the latter. But,
right.
but let's we're Stoic Lutherans, German Lutherans, and I mean I really am. I come from a solidly German Lutheran background.
Mm-hmm.
And you did not show emotion. My dad was one of the most emotional people around, but you did not show emotion in worship. And he had a disdain for contemporary worship because of the emotional aspect to it. But emotions, there's some hymns that I can't sing because they stir up in me emotions.
Uh-huh.
And it's not just the lack of testosterone. what relationship do emotions have in all this?
I mean, we are emotional beings, and I was reading a blog yesterday from Glenn Packiam, and I think he's working on this for his doctoral dissertation. He's a pastor at New Life Downtown, and tries to navigate this thing of emotions. I'm still wading through the article that he wrote. But, emotions in worship, you look scripturally. God's people expressed emotion. They danced. They shouted. They clapped. Those are emotional outpourings. So emotions have a place in worship. The challenge, I think, is manipulating them with a show.
And that's what I think he's getting at. He says, yeah. we don't want that anymore. The millennials don't want that. And I know he's only speaking for himself.
Well, and he's saying, I don't want to be targeted. I don't want to be catered to. Don't change things just so that you can reach me.
All right, let's take the third one on, which you just brought up. Don't target us.
Uh-huh.
And you had mentioned earlier that they are the most targeted. Something I'm not quoting you directly, but
well, as far as advertising goes,
yes.
they are the most targeted generation and have been since they came on the planet.
Okay, so that is another issue that they sit there and say, we don't want you to target us, to single us out,
right?
And for the purpose of selling your goods to us.
They want to know that you exist by word of mouth. Because if you have an authentic, real worship service where people experience Jesus Christ, then that word is going to spread and will eventually get to them, and then they will want to come experience what you're offering. But they want to hear about it from a friend or from a confidant. They don't want your flyer in the mail.
And it sounds like, too, that... I'm not sure if it was in this part of the article or in a different part, but he talked about more intergenerational. They don't want to be – I think it is about targeting because we have enough of these homogeneous groups, which we're going to try and take on in the next segment too. And yet, Holy Cross would be a great place for them to come.
Yeah. Another characteristic of millennials that's a little different, especially from Gen X, speaking as an Xer, is the strong desire to have mentors.
Okay. And we don't know how to mentor.
And millennials are more intentional about cross-generational communication.
Okay. And yet, I feel like I can't speak for my whole generation, but I feel like I don't do a good job of mentoring. You know, I don't know how. And you got a generation, because we weren't mentored necessarily, in the sense intentionally mentored.
Right.
We were in a small group where we would all get together with our truckload of kids, and we would send the kids down to the basement, and then we would sit around and we would study the Word of God, and we would talk about what it's like to be parents of small children, and we would say, well, we have this problem, and then all the other parents would go, yeah, we have that same problem. Well, how do we fix it? Well, none of us knew.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Sure.
And so these small groups just became us pooling our own stupidity together in one living room, and we needed somebody who had raised children to be in our small group with us so that we could talk about our struggles and they could coach us through them.
And yet what you don't need in that kind of an environment where I think people can come in and they'd say, well, you got to do this. You got to do this. You got to, and it comes kind of like, you know, if you don't do it this way, then you're a bad parent. Instead of, have you thought of doing this? You know, there's two different ways of approaching it. One can be very condemning, and I think what I'm also getting out of this is, and that gets to the last point that he brings out too, is the struggle is, it's okay to struggle. Because he says in the last part was, we welcome the toughest, deepest, grittiest, most desperate, most shocking questions.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Jeffrey, you're involved in LifeTree Cafe, and, mm-hmm. and in some ways, I feel even like LifeTree, it kind of touches the edge of that.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't necessarily get, it does deal with some issues that are really difficult, but sometimes even how those are dealt with still touches the edge. Is not really, and maybe that's just the group that gathers. But anyway, that to me is doesn't say tell me what to do. It's just wrestle with me through some
right.
of the difficulties of life. So I think that's it scares me like crazy to deal with questions. For example, like homosexuality, how do we deal with that in the church?
Mm-hmm.
It's out there, and you know, and you guys know me and in conversations we've had, that's a tough area for me to talk about.
Right, right.
And to deal with. Because, in the back of my brain, this is what goes on in my brain when we talk about homosexuality, is I'm thinking the person out there looks at the Christians and said, all they want to do is condemn homosexuals.
Mm-hmm.
And I
think the church has rightly earned that reputation.
Sometime I think what I need to do is go to a gay bar and just sit down and talk to gay people. I had a friend of mine whose pastor did that.
Okay.
And he would share with me his experience of doing that, when a positive experience it was. I had another friend of mine who worked it when he was doing his, I think it was CPE training. He went to the AIDS, it was with AIDS patients.
Okay.
Most of who were homosexual. And he dealt with his issues that way too. And those people responded to him very well, even though they knew where he stood on the issue of homosexuality.
I just Googled that. We've got several to choose from.
We do, huh? I'm sure we do. Sure we do. You know, but I'm just bringing that up as an example, mainly because that's in the forefront of a lot of people's thinking, Supreme Court issues.
It's a big issue right now. I mean, for me, people are people, and we've all got our issues and all have our challenges.
Yeah, and the three of us sure do, don't we?
And our eccentricities.
Yeah, but we don't talk about this in the church. We don't, I mean, and what I mean to talk about them. You, the three of us standing up on Sunday morning in worship and preaching about it is one thing, and that's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and doing it that way, it's one-way communication.
Yeah, and then you get the people who shake your hand and said, yeah, let them have a great, good job, or people coming out and saying, you know, you were too lenient, you know, or whatever else. It's like, that's not what, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's not just about homosexuality. That's about any issue we can dig up.
Or I hope those people heard it. That's my favorite comment.
Dave, one of the ones you and I have always had a struggle with is, well, how do you bring up abortion?
Right.
In the context, as you know, and we know people in our congregation who have had abortions.
Mm-hmm.
And they know the rightness and the wrongness of it, but they get hit between the eyes.
Yeah.
And maybe that's okay in one sense and not another, but we wrestle with that. So we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the blog that I wrote that's related to this. It's entitled From East to West, and we're going to go a little bit deeper and maybe a little different direction as we come back from this break.
Are you looking for a place where you can be welcomed as you are? A place where your thoughts are welcomed as well as your doubts? A place where you can talk about God without being judged? Then I invite you to join the life-changing experience of Life Tree Cafe. At Life Tree Cafe, you will spend an hour gathering with others to experience a host-led discussion over topics ranging from serious to fun and quirky. For more information about Life Tree Cafe and for a location near you, visit their website at www.lifetreecafe.com. If you live in the Colorado Springs community, you are more than welcome to join us at Holy Cross for one of three Life Tree experiences on Monday or Tuesday over the lunch hour from 11:45 to 12:45, or on Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. Life Tree Cafe, come join the conversation.
Well, we're glad that you've been with us on this second podcast of Praying with the Eyes. And I hope this has been stimulating for you and made you think. If it has and you have some questions or ideas you'd like to share with us, please, please feel free to email us at prayingwiththeeyes@gmail.com. And a reminder to you that this ministry of Praying with the Eyes is a part of a much bigger ministry here at Holy Cross Lutheran Church. If you want to find out more about us here at Holy Cross, you can check out our website at holycrosscs.org. And as I've mentioned before, I write a daily devotional blog. At least I post one now. I don't write one every day. Sometimes I'll go back and post old ones. And I was surprised the other day. I looked again, about 710, I think, is what I've written now. And it's those of you who know me know that was possible. It's not of me. But you can read those at the Praying with the Eyes website. I hope that's it's in transition, and so I'm hoping that, because we're recording this ahead of time, that that's up by the time you listen to this podcast and go there. If not, go to dougbronner.blogspot.com. You can read them there. I will put a link in the show notes when that's up and running with the website as well to these blogs. Anyway, the picture that served as the basis for this blog was taken in Lutherstadt, Wittenberg, in Germany. I happened to be there to baptize a baby from our congregation, a man in the military that was stationed in Germany, and got to baptize this baby in the same church that Martin Luther, baptized his kids in the Stadtkirche in Wittenberg. On the Saturday, it was at a English-speaking service on Saturday night when we baptized Grace. But Saturday morning, we were hanging out in Lutherstadt Wittenberg, and like many of the German cities, and those of you who've been to Germany know better than I do probably, there's a Marktplatz, or marketplace in the center of the city, and all these vendors are there, and it was the happening place on Saturday morning. And in Germany, people walk and ride their bikes, and it's kind of neat to see that, bikes everywhere, people walking everywhere, and people from all different sorts of backgrounds gathered together in this one place. People of different ages, different nationalities gathered there. And that became a picture for me of the church. And so I tied with that picture this scripture from Luke 13:29. And people will come from east and west, from north and south, and recline at table in the kingdom of God. That picture is of that reign of God that is coming when Christ returns. And when we are before the throne, before the Lamb who was slain for us, there will be people from all nationalities brought together. In my own personal way of seeing it, I don't see those nationalities being melted into one kind of person in heaven. I don't think that's going to be the picture I have of heaven. But these nationalities, these people of different colors, skin colors, and all being a part of that kingdom. That's just my personal example, a personal opinion. Anyway, I think that the church here on earth is to be a reflection of that now. But I struggle, guys, with that we talked about what's called the homogeneous principle, that people like to be with people like themselves. And you look at our church, it's pretty lily white. Mm-hmm. You know, why is it that we struggle so much with crossing lines of, and it's not just skin color lines, it's economic lines.
Yep. Socioeconomics, ethnicity.
Yeah. Why is it so difficult?
And even if you look at the personality types and jobs that our members hold, they fall into some small list of categories.
Go further with that.
Our congregation has, retired military, engineers, teachers, nurses.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. But one of the interesting changes that we are having here at Holy Cross as a result of both Life Tree Cafe and our food pantry is that we are having, there's a different group of people that are starting to make their presence known in the congregation.
I had a conversation with a gal in our church yesterday. We've had a woman from Life Tree Cafe find her way into the sanctuary on Sunday mornings now. And
very regularly.
Oh, yeah. She's here every Sunday now. And she doesn't quite pick up all of the quote-unquote appropriate ways to worship. That the three of us would know, oh, you can do that in worship, but you can't do that in worship. Mm-hmm. So, for example, during communion, she taps me on the shoulder and she wants to talk to me about some topic, you know. And she doesn't have a quiet demeanor.
No, she does.
She's just, so what do you think of this? You know, and that's during communion. And
is that before or after she takes a cigarette break?
It's after.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, true, she smells the cigarette smoke
and
she's got the gravelly smoker's voice.
And she's so addicted to it that she can't even stay away from a cigarette for an hour.
Yeah, and we don't love her any less because of that.
She's great.
So she talks through worship. Well, anyway, I was talking to this gal yesterday, and she said, you know what, I'm gonna take her off to the side and explain to her that she shouldn't talk during worship. And I said, you know what, it's okay. I said, it doesn't bother me. It's okay that she needs to talk things out during communion.
Well, and her belonging here is more important than following a certain unwritten code of conduct.
Yeah. And the reason that she loves coming to Holy Cross, and she actually said this to me a week ago at Lifetree, she said she's never been accepted as much as she is here.
And we pray that continues. See, well, my problem is that a lot of times, and this isn't just a Holy Cross issue, this is kind of the churches have their norms, mm-hmm. that they define by behavioral norms.
Yeah, so we have a norm at 11 o'clock. So.
Yeah, we do. And norms here every Sunday ushering.
Yep.
But we have those norms that define us, and my fear is this, is that we're going to be saying, okay, we'll accept you for so long in that old behavior, but eventually we expect you to conform to these norms, and the norm is you don't talk at that time. I don't know. Maybe I'm.
Well, and she's found a home in our most traditional liturgical service.
And yet sometimes the most lively, most friendly, yes, and most outgoing group of people. You and I talked about it Sunday, the noise that was going on before worship.
That's why you can't stereotype by worship style.
You can't. No.
And she has a circle of people around her at 8 o'clock that she's welcome to sit with. I mean, there's a list of 8 families there that, mm-hmm, if one family is not in worship on Sunday, that's fine. She's got 7 other families that she can sit with that have welcomed her, and we're so glad that she's there.
And we're talking about a person who, when first came to Lifetree, was saying, "I'm an atheist."
Said she was an atheist.
I mean, that to me blows me away. But we're bringing in different. We're not bringing anybody in.
God is bringing.
God is bringing in
some people that do not fit our current market profile.
The target. Yep. Target audience. Remember those days? Remember in church growth time, you had target, your target audience. Who's your target that you're going for?
Well, wouldn't your target be everyone outside your congregation?
Okay.
And I even have a book on my shelf that says Marketing the Church.
Okay, but Jeffrey, you're right. But in the church growth movement, there the one sociological principle that was bought by a lot of people is this homogeneous principle.
Yeah, affinity groups.
Yeah, you get people who are like you because people want to be with people who are like you. And at that time, I was a part of that group, and I didn't want to listen to that voice that said, you know, the church is heterogeneous. It's mixed of a lot of different people. And now I'm sitting here going, I wish I would have known that earlier instead of wasting time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's this vision of Luke of east and west, north and south. Mm-hmm. But we want to be with people from the north. North people want people from the north. People from the south want to be people from the south and so forth. I mean, human nature. It's human nature. It's not God's.
And the churches that are becoming more global, mm-hmm, or representing more of the greater culture are ones that are intentional and work very, very hard to do it.
Because it is hard work.
If a church wants to be multi-ethnic, they need to work at it.
Or multi-social classes.
Right. Not just the middle class.
The best example I had was of seeing it, and it was just for a moment, was I ended up in Los Angeles the day that the Rodney King riots broke out.
Holy moly.
We flew in, and it was a beautiful day. We flew into Long Beach and had a conference for that weekend. And all of a sudden you see this puff of smoke going up, and what was a beautiful day turned into a smoky day. With curfew going on, by Sunday they allowed us to leave, and we went to Hollywood Presbyterian Church. And at that time, I don't know if you guys ever heard of a guy by the name of Lloyd Ogilvie, was pastor of that church. But it was on the Strip, Hollywood Strip, and it had an amazing mixture of Hollywood actors and street people.
Hmm.
And they gathered together, and they worshiped together. We prayed with each other that day in the pews. He had us turn around and pray with each other, and no matter who you were with, and we were with a lady, Janice and I were with a lady who was not very well-to-do. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, we ran into a woman who was a comedian trying to make it in L.A., who was there in worship. It was just the most eclectic group I've ever experienced in a worship setting.
Uh-huh.
But it was intentional and hard work.
Right.
So, well, we thank you for joining us today on this Praying with the Eyes podcast. I hope you will join us again next week. Please, please, if this means a lot to you and you find it stimulating, please subscribe on iTunes to the podcast. It'll come out the 1st and the 15th of every month. And it is very helpful if you will write a review. They'll keep it up there in the front of iTunes and for others to come and see as well. So it's not just about that, because I need those reviews to let me know what you like about these podcasts, what you think needs to be worked on in these podcasts. I would appreciate that very much. So if you please leave a review.
And a rating.
And a rating, and a rating. And those things go hand in glove with each other, aren't they? Reviews and ratings are kind of next to each other. Anyway, yeah. both of them. I appreciate that. Again, you can follow the devotion at www.dougbronner.blogspot.com for the meantime, but probably going to be up on the website, the Praying with the Eyes website, which will be prayingwiththeeyes.com, and you can find those blogs there as well, plus blogs written by other people.
And if you need a place to send your hate mail, send it to jeffreym@holycrosscs.org. That's JeffreyM, as in mines, @holycrosscs.org.
We never put pastor in front of your name yet?
No.
Oh, that's interesting.
Then everybody would have to change their address
to
books
do
that have Jeffrey
that's
in
true.
There.
That's true. That's just too much work for the rest of us. Who cares about
Jeffrey?
I don't want to change
my address.
You can email us at prayingwiththeeyes@gmail.com if you have questions or thoughts. Please visit Holy Cross's website at holycrosscs.org. If you don't have a church home and you live here in the Colorado Springs area, we'd love to have you come and join us for worship at 8, 9:30, and 11 on Sunday mornings. We have Sunday school and adult Bible classes at 9:30 and adult classes at 11 that you can join. As you've heard us talk about in this podcast, we have a ministry called Life Tree Cafe, and it meets on Mondays and Tuesdays over the lunch hour from 11:45 to 12:45. If you want to find out more about Life Tree Cafe, you can go to their website at www.lifetreecafe.com. And especially if you don't live here in the Colorado Springs area, there's Life Tree Cafes all over this country, and you might be able to find one in your own city. You can follow me on Twitter at Praying With Eyes. You can join my Facebook, Praying With the Eyes group. That's a lot of fun. We got people who post pictures there and encourage each other. Or again, you can go to the Praying With the Eyes website at www.prayingwiththeeyes.com. Joining me on the next episode of the Praying With the Eyes podcast is my friend and member of my congregation, Des Bustamante, as we talk about this idea of the pursuit of happiness. Thanks for joining us. I look forward to being with you on our next podcast.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of the Praying With the Eyes podcast. These podcasts are produced by Laird Production, which you may contact at lairdproduction.com. For thoughts and questions that you may have, please email Doug at prayingwiththeeyes@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to the Praying With the Eyes podcast on iTunes, as well as post a review. We invite you to tell a friend about today's podcast by posting a link on your social media account. We look forward to being with you in our next episode.